Let's get started. Thanks for coming to this presentation on the VIX API. You may have noticed in the printed materials, it's actually called the VMware Programming API. We have now officially named the offering the VIX API, so that accounts for the discrepancy. The stuff went off the printers a little early. I'm Matt LaMontia. I'm the R&D manager of the VIX API group. This is Dawson Dean, the architect, and we'd like to tell you about this new SDK API offering from VMware. What we'll be going through, just to start with an introduction of what it is, why you'd want to use it. Then we'll go through in detail a couple of use cases. Then Dawson will give you a more detailed view on what exactly is present in the API and what you can do with it. Then we'll wrap up. Let's start with a little bit of motivation. Why are we giving you a new API offering? The idea is to lower the bar to make it much easier for you to build solutions on VMware's platform offerings. Specifically, it's designed in a way to let you use virtualization not just as a platform to automate, but actually as a technology to use in your own solutions. In that way, we'll just go on. In this sense, the typical users might be ISV partners who want to build an application on top of VMware's platforms, server administrators who want to automate individual VMware instances in their environment, development and test users who want to automate their own environment, and also systems integrators who want to integrate VMware technology with other applications. Some use cases based on this might be to actually develop a vertical solution based on VMware's platform offerings, automating your dev and test environment, automating our products in a way that increases your own productivity, packing guest OSs, and also I want to note that we actually use this API to build parts of our own GUI user interface on our own products. So what makes VIX different from other API offerings we've had to date is that we have a sort of different paradigm here. We have VM operations that actually let you automate the virtual hardware, things like power operations, loading up VMs, but we also have guest operations, which is to say, in a guest operating system neutral way, we're going to let you automate and make things happen inside the guest. And the idea is that by bringing these two things together, we give you a way to have an integrated solution and make things happen for you, make the whole environment do things for you instead of just automating the virtual hardware. We're going to come back to this. This will become a little more obvious as we go through the use cases in detail. The products that are currently supported by the VIX API debuted over the summer with VMware Server 1.0, and it's also present in Workstation 6.0, which is in beta now and available to you as VMware VMworld attendees. And I just want to note that with 6.0 with Workstation, you actually get an extended and expanded version of the API. So the initial version was in VMware Server. There's actually a much richer set of especially guest operating system functionality in the new version of Workstation. So what are the design goals and sort of the key themes of the API? The first is that it was designed to be simple. It has about 4 or 5 different data types, fundamental data types, and about 70 functions to let you do things with VMs. And because we've started on our hosted products, Server and Workstation, it requires no special infrastructure. So this is something that you can start programming against on your desktop yourself. We've focused on the core operations that you would want to do in order to accomplish things with VMs. Things like powering on and off or suspending virtual machines, creating and manipulating snapshot state so that you can start from a known state, do something, and roll back to it programmatically if you want to, running programs in the guest OS, and file manipulation in the guest OS. And this is something that adds a lot of power because when you can both automate the virtual hardware, you know, load up a virtual machine, and then tell that virtual machine to do a specific task, you can do scripting and automation of operations in multiple operating systems in an operating system neutral way. And it gives you a very powerful platform for using a VM to encapsulate an environment which solves a task In terms of language support, the core API is in C, and we offer Perl and COM bindings, which gives you also Visual Basic, VBScript, C Sharp. And there's also a command line utility if you just want to write shell or bash scripts to do the same thing. This last point, that it's asynchronous but easy to use synchronously, means that it's got a threading model and a job model that are suitable for actually developing thick client GUIs, like a Windows GUI. And that's what we use, but it's also very easy to use in a scripting manner where you just do operation by operation and use it like a scripting language. So let's delve into a couple of use cases. And there are a couple of major themes to these use cases. The first is integrating virtualization into your own solution. For instance, building a vertical application on top of our platform offerings. The idea here is that you're the innovators. You have your needs, and we'd like to enable you to solve specific needs using virtualization. And the second, and in this way, we've given you an API which, you know, as I said before, gives you the language bindings that you need, and we use these APIs to develop our own GraphQL user interfaces. So the first example of this is the IDE integration tool, which will actually be shipping with Workstation 6.0 as an add-on. What we've got going on here is that on the host side, someone is writing a program in Microsoft Visual Studio here, but it could be just as easily be Eclipse. And instead of testing their code on the host, they get to automate the process of testing their code in a guest operating system. So you build on the host, and then the plugin, using the API, automates the process of copying your files, moving your files into the guest, and actually triggering that test process in the guest. So to go in a little more detail, sort of the use model here is that you would write and edit code and just automatically debug in a VM. Using the Vix API, what the extension that's already written will do for you is launch the VM, power it up, and we actually offer functionality to let you check that the guest operating system is actually fully booted. You can do things like manipulate file state and actually automatically create a shared folder into the guest for you, run the program that you wanted in that shared folder, and actually, because we expose process information to the guest, it can attach the debugger to the guest process. And the idea here is that now a VM is not just, a specific VM is not just it's not just sort of a virtual computer, but it's actually an environment which you're using to enable a host application. The second theme of these cases is basically scripting or creating your one-off special purpose solution. In the same way, you're going to use a VM as an environment to encapsulate a solution to a problem, but it's easy enough to use that you can do it on a one-off basis to automate a bug repro case, test case, a build environment. You could also encapsulate an untrusted application, or you could encapsulate the environment to reproduce like a customer configuration call. In this way, it's a sort of a paradigm shift where you have, instead of having a virtual machine as a general purpose computer, you're actually encapsulating with this virtual machine a specific environment to solve a specific problem. So an example of this would be automating your nightly builds. And you can just use the scripting language to power on your VM, copy in data files, or call out to your source control management system to synchronize your data files, and then run the build inside the VM, trigger that from outside, and you can, since you can see file state, you could check that it completed successfully, run tests, copy test result files, and so on. Now, this is a dev test scenario, but you could see how using those same basic operations, you could use that to back up or to trigger virus scanning automatically inside a VM or to apply an OS patch. Just to run through what was going on there, the idea is that you start with your host environment and you would have VMware server running. You would tell it to load and power on a VM. So you get your VM. You could copy files into the guest, trigger a build, which would create some result files, and then copy them back to your host. And you can see again how this would give you a number of variations based on the same kind of basic operations. And because you're automating it in a guest operating system neutral way, you could actually, from one host, automate a whole series of builds on different operating systems or tests in different operating systems just by changing the guest and maybe changing some file paths that you were copying to. So Dawson right now is going to give you a more detailed view on the API.
Can everyone hear me?
Okay,
great. Good morning. So what I want to do is I want to spend some time and just sort of talk to you about some of the basic themes of the API. And at one point this was a really horrible laundry list of all the different functions in the API, and so we're not going to go into that kind of detail. One of the nice things is that all this stuff is designed to be really simple. So when you really want to get down into the nuts and bolts, into the dirty details of it, you can take a look at a header file, you can spend 5 minutes looking through it and go, oh yeah, right, that makes sense. So hopefully we're not going to have to go through too many, you know, syntax and type manipulation details here. It's all going to be pretty obvious. And instead what I want to do is sort of set in your mind some of the ideas that we are trying to stick true to when designing the API, and hopefully we'll make it more clear of sort of not only how it works, but how we're hoping that you guys can find some usefulness in it. So the first thing is kind of what I've already been talking about, is this whole idea of we're really trying to stay out of your way. We're trying to keep the API as simple as possible. We're trying to make it something that you can use to get your work done, to solve your problems. It's not a test. It's not hard. It's not designed to be a challenge. So one of the things is the API runs on a whole range of different programming languages. It can start at C, so it's low-level detail stuff, but it's also designed to work all the way up through shell script. And one of the things that means is we've had to make it sort of very concise and very easy to use and very focused on the kinds of operations that we're expecting people to want to use virtual machines for. So it's something that you can credibly say, you know, here's a 10-line Perl script, which we're going to walk through in a minute, or, you know, here's a real simple C program that I can use to integrate into some big, fat, thick, GUI application, or, you know, here's my simple, you know, Java applet or a batch script. There's 70 functions, which, when I actually counted it, that seem a lot more than it feels like. There's only really 4 key data types. We're going to go over that in just a minute. And the idea when designing this whole thing, we sort of had the sweet spot, the kind of hello world program of, you know, how can we get something useful done in 10 lines? So that's what we're trying to shoot for. The API is basically an object model. And so we first of all spent a lot of time looking at different object models and sort of server applications and thick GUI clients, and so we tried to draw some of the lessons that you see in that. And so everything is based around, like I said in the previous slide, there's sort of 4 basic object types, and so everything's a bunch of methods on those different object types. The API itself is also designed for a lot of future growth, and it's going to maintain both binary and source compatibility. So that's a really, really key thing, is that we want to protect your investment. We respect your time. If you make a commitment, you build something on top of this API, we're not going to break it. We're going to protect the investment, your technology investment, of anything you build on top of the API. So we're really, really focused on all kinds of compatibility. Now that being said, we're also going to keep growing the API. So already between the first, you know, sort of preliminary version that came out with VMware Server and the version that's coming out with VMware Workstation 6, we've added just a ton of really great new features to it. But again, you know, anything that's built on top of that original API, it all still works. So the API itself is sort of designed with some kind of sweeping visions, and hopefully that's going to give us, you know, we can keep adding a lot of useful functions and stay within that existing framework. So the object itself, it's an object model, and so that means that you have these opaque references to objects. You get something that sort of acts like a pointer. It references an object, and you can get and set properties on these things. That's sort of one of the cases where we're going to be able to add a lot of future growth, is that we can give you lots of sort of new properties that you can manipulate in future versions. And it, you know, all these properties are the basic sort of built-in types. You know, again, one of the things also notice is that, you know, it's opaque handles, and that's also partly the language independence starting to happen there, is that, you know, we didn't give you just a bunch of C structs or things like that wouldn't necessarily map into different kinds of programming languages. We wanted to give you something that was going to be able to be, you know, work and have the same kind of semantics as you did across the various programming languages. So the HDI really feels the same when you're writing C code, or you're writing Perl code, or you're doing whatever else. These are the basic types. We're going to add some more types later, but this is plenty to get in trouble with right now. And I'm going to go through these in a little bit more detail, and then I just kind of wanted to give you sort of show them all on one slide. So we've got the idea of a host, and that's basically the physical machine. That represents the physical machine that you're running all these VMs on. You've got the idea of a VM. You've got a VM object. So you can do stuff on that. You've got an idea of a job, which is not only sorry to mention that, that's sort of the state of something that's going on asynchronously. And we'll talk about that a bit more in a minute. And basically, the job is sort of there. That's how we're going to express asynchrony to you. And there are easy ways of manipulating that so that, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, reading some callbacks, all kinds of crazy stuff. It's like asynchrony is really, really, really easy. So we'll walk through that in a minute. And then we have an object for a snapshot. And again, I mean, the snapshot to me is sort of just an example of, you know, we're spending a lot of time talking to a lot of customers and trying to understand the scenarios you're looking at. And so when we talked to a lot of people, one of the things that came up was, well, you know, I want to be able to, you know, manipulate the snapshots in the VM. So that raised the priority of this, and so we're, okay, fine. So it's not only first-class data structure, but it's first-class data structure that's getting into the release right away. So I want to go through some of these different types in a little bit more detail, and so I'll start with the host. I mean, as I said, the host is, this is what you're running a VM on. Well, the fact that we've represented that and manipulated that as a first-class data structure means that we expect this thing to run on a bunch of different hosts at one time. So, for example, in VMware Server, that supports remote hosts. So this encapsulates all the differences between running something locally and running something remotely. And that's one of the things that we try to stick true to throughout the API, is that, you know, if you're running something on your local workstation on this box, or if you're running something remotely on a server that's in another building or, you know, across the country, the whole thing just works the same, and there's no special hoops you have to jump through. Also, the host represents different products. So I can be doing manipulations on a bunch of VMs that are on my local workstation, and then turn around and do a whole bunch of stuff on some VMs that are running a VMware server that's on a different machine. Now, there's some caveats to this. The fact that they're running on different products, first of all, some things do and don't make sense on all products. For example, VMware server has this whole notion of registering VMs. And so that's something that you do through this API when you're talking to a server, but it's just a no-op when you're talking to a workstation, because the workstation product just doesn't have any concept of what a registered VM is. It doesn't manage VMs in the same way. So you're going to see some sort of small tweaks there. And also, because we're going to continue to resolve the API, some things aren't going to be supported across it. So if I'm talking to a really old version of, say, server, and I say, hey, great, let's go use new cool workstation features, it's going to come back and say, that's just something that I don't recognize, I don't support. So modular is caveats, though. We try to factor out, we try to make the semantics and the functionality work as similarly as possible, and certainly, as I was saying before, I mean, you know, we're really focused on protecting, you know, your investment and protecting compatibility. So as we roll new features out, we're trying to roll them out across the product line. So VMs. VMs are, I mean, obviously this is sort of the basic, this is what the whole thing's about, this is what we're all about here. And so these are we have this first class object, it represents the VM. It represents both sort of the static configuration state, so it says things like, you know, I've got 5 snapshots and 12 virtual disks and all this stuff going on. But it also represents the state of the guest operating system. It has a lot of the basic functions you would expect. You can power it on, power it off, things like that. And in that sense, you know, this is sort of similar to a lot of object mounting foods, but you know, there's going to be a command that corresponds to sort of every menu item in a typical GUI. And that's sort of the level of granularity we're shooting for. Some of the guest OS functions, to me, this is a lot of sort of what this API is about. It's not so much about, you know, how can I automate adding a virtual disk to a VM, but how can I do stuff in the guest and then start to make the VM jump through hoops that are going to be useful to me. So we have basic functions for sort of the high-level kind of concepts of a guest OS. So we can manipulate proxies on the guest. So you can, like, you know, list proxies and start new programs and kill proxies, things like that. We have commands to manipulate files on the guest. You can copy files in and out of the guest and delete directories and list directories and all that sort of basic stuff. And we've also got some other commands. And again, this is a case where this sort of other bucket is a place where, you know, a lot of the customer feedback came back to us and said, well, look, I want to be able to go out and write a 10-line Perl script that's going to upgrade the virtual hardware on every machine I've got in my catalog, in my VM catalog. So we allow you to do things like that. We also allow you to, explicitly manipulate guest variables. And so that's partly for compatibility with the previous VMware automation APIs. And it also, it turned out to be a really nice sort of way of extending and opening up a lot of the guest environment to you on running on the host. I want to walk through a sample. This is sort of the canonical 10-line. This is our hello world. This is the 10-line script. This is the thing that we hope that, you know, everyone's going to be writing all the time in various forms. In order to make this not a complete unreadable eye chart, we left out a little bit. So I'm not declaring my variables, and I'm not checking my error code. And I've got some sort of ellipses where there's like four or five different parameters that are flags and things like that. So, you know, it turns out to be surprisingly hard to write a piece of code that also fits on a PowerPoint slide. But that's what we're, you know, this really is sort of, you know, in a word processor, you know, in a text editor, you open it up, and this is a page of code about. And so I want to kind of walk through this in a little bit of detail. And sort of talk through the different commands you see here. So this first thing we start off and we say connect. And here's where I'm specifying the host I'm going to talk to. Now on workstation, that's always going to be my local host. But on server, this can be, you know, something that's running in the machine room down the hall, across the country, all that stuff. So I identify the host, and I also provide some basic authentication credentials. I give my, you know, username, password, things like that to connect to the host. And I get back this job handle. And this job handle says, okay, you know, maybe this is some server down the hall, and so it's going to be, you know, a bunch of network handshakes to get this. So I'll let you know when it's done. Now, that job handle, I can wait, and I can say, all right, that's fine. I'm going to stop right here and wait until it's finished. Well, alternatively, I can do a variety of things with that asynchronous job handle. I can sort of file it off in global data structures, and I can integrate it with my event loop, and I can hang semaphores off it, and all kinds of fancy stuff. And I can basically start to treat it as an asynchronous operation. But so for all these examples we're going to go through, we're basically treating this code as just a bunch of synchronous calls. And that's the easiest way to use the API. That's how we use the API when we write all of our test code. That's how I use it when I'm debugging stuff. And it's a great way to sort of avoid a lot of the complexity that normally comes up when someone gives you an asynchronous API. On the other hand, if I am Mr., you know, re-entering callback event loop guy, then this is also, which I like to think of myself as sometimes, then this is also a great way of getting all that. So if you're writing a fat, thick C application, like some kind of a GUI app, you can go to town on this. If you're writing something simple and quick, you can avoid it all. So that gets us to this first one. I basically said, hey, go open up the host, connect to it, authenticate, do all the handshakes, and give me this host handle back. Remember, this thing is kind of basically an object model. We're showing you C code, So we're going to be passing the object references as parameters. But you can imagine, I mean, if this were C++, I'd get back something that I'd be, you know, invoking methods on, things like that. So the next thing I do is I say, okay, I've got something that references the host, and now I'd like to open up a particular VM on the host. So again, I specify, you know, I specify the host handle now, and I'm specifying, you know, some identifier like the file path name that gives me the VM. I wait until that's finished, get the VM handle. So now I've got two different handles. They're both sort of these opaque reference to objects. And now I say power on. And here's the case also, you know, where asynchrony is a big deal. I mean, before I was saying things like, well, you know, this may be some kind of a network operation that goes down the hall. Now I'm booting up virtual hardware. So this is, you know, something like 30, 40 seconds. So I power this thing on, and then I wait until it's done. And when it's done, I've basically done the equivalent of pushing the on button on my Dell box. So I've got hardware, I've got virtual hardware that's running. So maybe that's got no guest operation, no guest OS installed. Maybe I don't care about the guest OS. Maybe, you know, for a variety of reasons, maybe I'm done. On the other hand, maybe I want to do something useful with the guest. So the next command here I say, wait for all the guests to boot up. And so that's saying, okay, that's another 30, 40 seconds. And that's waiting for Linux or Windows or whatever to finish its booting. And it comes back and says, yeah, okay, now you've got a hardware and you've got, you know, a welcome screen. You've got the guest operating system is booted. So next I say, okay, log in. And log in basically means this is the person I want you to do all these file and process operations under. So I'm going to start to manipulate stuff in the guest, and I want you to respect the guest security. And so when you do those file operations, when you do that stuff, this is the identity of the user. And then I say, run a program in the guest. Now, so finally, you know, here's kind of the payoff. So now I'm running my virus checker, my backup program, my patch installer, my whatever, and I'm getting that running in the guest OS. So this is what it looks like in C. Okay. Alright. So let me go through some of the... Okay, so let me go through some of the job operations. And this actually is some of the stuff that I've already been talking about. I mean, this is the thing, this is the Java operations that we just saw, and these are some of the more kind of complex things that, you know, jobs can be as fancy as you want, they can also be as simple as you want. That's sort of the big takeaway there. This is what the same code, that C code looks like in Perl. And this is the same program. And, again, I've left out variables. But actually, we had a version of the slide where we had all the variables, and it was just font manipulation to make it kind of prettier. But, you know, again, I mean, the big point I'm trying to make here is, you know, it's hopefully simple. The hello world is fairly small and concise, and you can do useful things pretty easily. So, you know, again, we connect, we open, we power on, we wait for the guest, we log in, and then we run a program. And again, the feel of the code is basically the same. So we try to also keep everything, you know, very similar, even though there's some sort of minor details that are different because of different languages. So Perl is in C, and so there's going to be some differences about, like, you know, we're returning two values instead of one in some of these functions and things like that. And here is the same program in batch. So when you write your shell script, this is how you do the same thing. So you use the VM run program, which we shipped originally with Workstation 5, and it ships with VMware Server, and we'll ship with Workstation 6. And VM run is built on top of all this stuff. VM run is also built on top of X. And so you can do these same kind of operations with, you know, a one-line batch script or a one-line shell script. And so here again, I mean, part of what we're trying to do is make this stuff easy to use. And so if you're not a C programmer, no problem. If you're not a Perl programmer, no problem. We can give you something that's going to make it easy for you to use these tools. So, okay, so the future plans. Well, there are a lot. We're going to be adding a lot of functionality to the API in coming releases, and part of what we're here for today is to talk to me about the stuff we've done, but we also need to hear from you guys what you want. And so in particular, we can go to town. We can add all kinds of crazy stuff, but the goal is to add stuff that you actually are going to use. So you need to tell us whether you want to do different kinds of things in the guest operating system. Do you want to read and write the Windows registry? Do you want to manipulate UI windows? What is going to be useful to you? You need to tell us what kind of language bindings you like. We're giving you C, we're giving you Perl, we're giving you COM, but what else is important? You know, is Java really important? Is Python important? Are other languages really important? You need to tell us, you know, what kinds of features we can provide to you that's going to make it easier to start to embed virtualization as a runtime environment into your applications. So how can we package this? How can we integrate this better? You need to tell us what kind of VM configuration creation stuff you like. For example, this actually turns out to be surprisingly tricky. What level of detail do you guys need? Because we can go down and give you sort of the kitchen sink, and you're going to get something that looks like the kitchen sink. It's going to have 10,000 different ways to add a hard disk. On the other hand, do you just want an eject disk function, or do you want an insert CD function? That's the kind of stuff we need to hear from you guys, is sort of what level of detail, what granularity do you want? Do you want to be able to specify, you know, what scheduler versus IDE controller a particular disk emulates, or do you want sort of higher level? And finally, you know, do you want other stuff that's part of VMware's offerings? We provide keys. Do you want to manipulate those guys through the functionality, through the API as well? So that's the kind of stuff that we also want to hear from you to help direct us to build the next release of this. So there are lots of ways to tell us. You can email us, and that those really are our email addresses, so you can email us. You can go to the labs, and there's going to be some really excellent labs here at VMworld that's going to walk you through a lot of the details and get you up to speed, or show you some samples and get you programming using the API. You can be involved in the discussion forums, or you can grab us right now. You can ask questions, but also after we're done with this talk, we're going to 505, which
right around the corner over there
is really close. And we're going to be there for a while. So that's a great opportunity for you to talk to us. So with that, we can start now. Are there any questions?
Linux, different versions, giving examples, simply use it, and try to get tools to install correctly. Is there any way to write functions in this? I realize you have to have tools installed for this to work in the Git. Is there a way to write functions in this that automate or extract the process of me as a user taking a little bit different Linux Git and fixing it so the tools work?
So what do you mean fixed?
So I'll just give you an example. In Nepos, the X GUI is in the wrong place. So, since it's not a standard Linux yet that you all have certified for ESX, the script that you've given for the tools can't find the correct position to recompile the XOR to make it work right.
Okay, this is
10 hours trying to figure out, just reading your script, trying to figure out where it was doing that so I could redo the
paths,
and it got confusing because I'm not appropriate.
Okay, so this is the script we're running once the tools have been installed?
No, this is the script you're running to recompile
the tools
specifically
okay.
For this a little bit different flavor of Unix. Because Unix is
going to
keep doing it, isn't it?
Okay.
It's
going to
keep doing it.
Yes, that's its charm. Yeah. Right now, we can't. We haven't. This is the first time. Come talk to us. That sounds like a really hard problem. Right now, the kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, part of
the question before, and nobody is.
Yeah. I mean, part of what you want to do is abstract away some of the differences between different Linux distributions. And that's actually, I mean, the location of paths is sort of one of the tricks that we're not dealing with well. I mean, one of the things is you can write code that's OS agnostic. So I can say, you know, run a program into guest, copy files in and out of guest, things like that. Path names are okay for some of this, but, you know, if you have a C drive on a Windows guest, you have no concept of that on a Linux guest. And in that sense, you're going to start right, you know, you're going to start to see some of the guest specifics are going to start to show up in these scripts. So that's one of the weaknesses is getting, you know, just basic differences in the path names. Now, I don't know, I mean, that's the kind of thing. I mean, tell us, are there things that we can, you know, leverage off of in the way you're using it? You know, are there environment variables we can pick up or things like that?
Just one other comment. It occurs to me that after the presentation I saw this morning with appliances built on Linux, isn't it the case that at the general session, all those guys talking about appliances, they're not talking about Windows appliances. They're talking about Linux-based appliances, aren't they?
Yeah. And part of that, well, part of that is there's licensing and redistribution issues as well.
Yeah, right. So APIs that help you do that, to me, that's a big
flag. Yeah, one of the intended use cases actually is to help automate the process of building appliances, because essentially we let you script from the host side, injecting files and manipulating files and building things into the guest. So in that way, you could use this either, you know, through scripting from a host side make file, or by, you know, essentially to help you automate the process of building and rebuilding and testing appliances. Yes.
Preferences. I'm working in government information, and I see the VMware Connect, and it has username and password. Do y'all use any network-based encryption? If not, that raises all kinds of
flags
for me.
Yeah, yeah, we do. I mean, it's we're not sending passwords over the clear. So.
But, and the other important thing to note is just that, you know, you can turn off the guest access as well. Right.
Yeah, there's, I mean, you can if you connect to a VM and are authenticated to open up a user session, a console, a Windows console, so a virtual desktop, then you already have established enough privileges. You have write access to the virtual disk, and so at that point we said, well, if you only want to run as that console user, then you can avoid this login step altogether. And that was there largely to make things more seamless, so that you can establish yourself once, open up your, you know, keyboard window session, and then at that point you can just start firing off scripts without having to store passwords or, you know, explicitly log into the guest that way. Yes?
If you've got a password on the end line, then it's in the process thing once you do
it. That's right. And so there are ways of, in the CISO, for example, you wouldn't do that in the shell command.
Is that's an issue. Sure,
you could do that. Yeah, you can't now. That's something we need to look at. Yes.
So I didn't see any reference to ESX.
Yeah.
Let me do this.
That was what I was hoping to get out of here. So, what should I use today, and when can I use your
stuff on the web? So, we understand how valuable ESX support is to you. And we are currently investigating supporting ESX. One of our best guys is investigating it, and he's not here because he's home and he's back in Palo Alto actively investigating it today.
We can't do that. We can't.
We're investigating it.
Is his ankle sprained today?
Yeah, pretty much.
So what do I What do I use today?
Okay, so today,
should we go to the slides?
No. Okay, sorry. So, it depends on what you're trying to do. Okay.
They're not really clusters, but I have groups of machines that have dependencies within each other, so I want to deploy them as a group, and I need to start them up.
Sounds like, wow, that's a team. Yeah. Okay. So first of all, you know, that sounds like a team. And that's something that we give you through user interface in Workstation, but that's like kind of one of the, hey, do you want teams? Well, sounds like maybe you do. So having that kind of automation would be useful for you. There are several options. You can right now use the you can use the existing VMware automation APIs, which are deprecated. I knew you'd be as thrilled about that as we are about it. Right. And you can use the virtual infrastructure API. And the virtual infrastructure API is a separate offering from VMware. And a lot of people ask us, so what's the difference between virtual infrastructure API and the WIS API? The virtual infrastructure API is sort of really focused on the large, and we're really focused on the small. So, and there's some overlap. So you can power on a VM and do basic stuff in both. But if you want to do manipulation in a data center, if you want to do things like vMotion, if you want to do sort of a lot of, kind of really in the large data center level automation operations, that's what you do. You performance monitoring, things like that. If you want to do stuff like, hey, I want to power on my VMs and run my, virus checker in my VMs, that's the small. That's the VM-centric world, and we're the API for that.
And that's the answer to his question about why not ESS, because
GISPK
is obviously set up to manipulate ESS, right?
Well, yeah. We don't see the fundamental difference between the two SDKs as platform. We're not trying to delineate them along platform. Because a long-term goal is having API compatibility across product lines. However, really they're differentiated. That's why we sort of didn't go to the slide right away, because it makes it look like the current fact is the VI SDK is on ESX and the VIX API is on server and workstation, but the real design difference is in the use cases, which is to say the scale of the operation that you're trying to do. VIX API gives you a very close view of an individual instance of a VMware product. It gives you very fine-grained control into the guest operating system, process control, file control, a lot of very detailed information at that. So it's about solving, it's about encapsulating environments, scripting specific tasks, making things happen in the guest operating system, whereas the VI SDK is the virtual infrastructure SDK, and it lets you do infrastructure operations like vMotion, which is a concept which will never make sense in the VIX API, in the conceptual framework of the VIX API. So there's the current fact of the product compatibility, but that is aligned with this sort of long-term conceptual differentiation between the two offerings. Does that make sense to you?
You want? I'm curious about it. I mentioned earlier the way you referenced in one of your questions there, that you have to understand and know the physical location of the VM file. Is there a way to abstract that to just ask for a VM name?
We have absolute path partly because a lot of this stuff emerged off the hosted architecture, and so that's how you identify VMs. They're files, they're not managed, users can copy them. And so that's the kind of thing that as we start to support more products that have sort of more VM management support, we're going to start to leverage off that. All right, let's start with the player question, which is that if you're an independent software vendor who's
interested in using Player as a runtime with this API, talk to us. What was the first part of the question?
Cloning. Link cloning, no, we don't support it yet. And then, and also that's the kind of thing. I mean, if you need that, let us know. We're more than happy to have that kind of stuff.
Yes?
We don't have that yet. And again, I mean, that, if that's the kind of thing, I mean, send performance counters, and so do we expose, I mean, I assume that you want performance counters from the guest as well as from the host? Right. We don't have that now, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, we can add if people are asking for it.
I know, I would like to see that personally. I mean, I think it'd be useful if we had like a guest agnostic way to check performance monitoring on those guests and say do external operations, like bring another instance online. Say we had, you know, a cluster of these guys, or they were load balanced, have like, you know, a guest agnostic way to check to see if those, both those VMs are running
So have you seen like some of the, like on Windows, there's performance mod, there's perfmon integration and stuff like that. Is that the kind of granularity you're looking at?
Yeah, what I'm looking for is like, say I don't want to have to look for performance management stuff via WMI or via SMMT. I'd like to be able to get that back based on, or regardless of whether I'm running a Windows guest or a Linux guest or what have you.
Okay.
And then, you know, take some kind of action based on that.
Right.
It'd be great if, you know, say I run like 5 VMs behind an F5 unit, and F5 can monitor the performance levels on those guys, and then bring up a new one and add it into its load balance pool, which is, they start to run pretty hot.
Okay. I know we have someone very patient out in the back. Workstation 6.0, currently in beta.
When do we get that?
Go by the workstation, the dev test pod in the area there. That'll place to sign up for the beta for workstation is still in the private beta. It will be public beta later on. But by the end of them, we'll attend. You can join that private beta, and there's a way to sign up at the pod.
Thanks, Rob. Yes?
Is there a way to actually pull the number of, like on servers, you have one or two virtual machines, can I pull the whole of the machine? How many CPUs do you have to be running with?
Properly for number of CPUs. Yes, that is exposed. Right. So okay. Right. So the yes, that's the property of the VM, and the reason I'm hesitating is, I mean, partly for development reasons, and also partly for future growth. I'm not necessarily always sure what we've exposed in this release and what we haven't. So yes, you get the property for the VM.
So you want to be able to read values out of the VMX file.
I don't think that's not public.
So not yet. If you need it, that's something that also we can add.
But isn't that ESX?
No, the VMX variable, the configuration variables, I mean, that's common with any VM.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be running 200 of them on server, right?
Oh.
Well, 50 hosts.
Yeah.
Four
guests,
for
host.
Running server or ESX?
Server.
Who's next? You then you.
Development group is one development group working on both of them, management, reporting to one management.
The point to the guy in the back. there are different development groups. There's different products within VMware. And, as I said, they're really thinking about how do you manage the data center and how do you automate virtual machines on the large scale. And so they're looking at a lot of issues that are really particular to that. We've been spending a lot of our time looking at a really different problem of how do I manage virtual machines on the individual scale and what can I do with the guests and things like that. Yes?
If the guest list gets compromised, how forward is it? Can malicious program and the guest try to get back at the host?
No, you can use this API from the guest to attack the host.
Or attack it somehow. Well, why not?
Because this is an API.
You can, but you would need host credentials, just like you would.
This is an API that you're running on the host to manipulate the guest. So. Yes. No, there's not. But that's also, that's something I've heard of before, and that's the kind of thing. Tell us, at some point, maybe after this, give us some more detail about what you're trying to do, and that's also the kind of thing that we could look at.
And we're almost out of time, so I just want to say before we get cut off that just around the corner, we've got some food. We'd love to keep talking, so we'll take another question or two if we have time, but then join us and we'll just talk on a smaller scale.
Yeah. Are the slides available?
They'll be on the website eventually. I believe
they were already posted.
There might be. I'm not
in the content catalog.
Right, but we've updated it. So you want to pull the latest ones off the website. Yep. The guest operations depend on the tools and the guest, but a lot of the host operations and things like installing the tools and the guest is not dependent on those tools.
So, for example, you can manipulate snapshot state without having tools installed in the guest, but you can't get a list of the files or the processes running, copy files, or run a program.
Yes, and that's exactly what you do. So you power on your VM, get the new tools in, and then start talking to the guest through that. Yes. Yeah, and a lot of stuff really is host feature. For example, the previous question about reading and writing the VMX config options, that's just doing it on the host. And so, power ops, snapshots, a lot of the stuff is all running just on the host. Any other questions? Okay, we'll be in 5:05. Thanks very much. Do you know how to turn this on? Okay.
Hi. FBI for Rector Center 14.
Oh, yeah.
Let me get your mic. Thank you. Are you speaking in the next session?
Hey!
No?
Hey! Bobby, you're on. I'm going to
Thank you.